Welcome to Voting Matters, a series of conversations about the voting process from WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Now, here's your co-hosts, Liza Holland, president of the Lexington chapter of LWV, and WUKY's Alan Lytle.
Welcome once again, Liza.
Thank you so very much, Alan. It's wonderful to be here.
Wasn't it great to hear from a young person, Cricket Brown, in our last podcast?
Oh my gosh, the energy and enthusiasm was just amazing. And, you know, it's those youth that give me the hope for the future.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking about all things, you know, voting, and we're kind of almost to the tail end here as early voting starts on October 31st.
Oh, I know. We're right up on it here. And so if this one lands before the 22nd, there's one last opportunity to be able to get an excused absentee ballot by the 22nd. But then you can vote those 3 days, October 31st, 1st, and 2nd, at all the library locations in Lexington.
And now the League has started canvassing on weekends in particular neighborhoods, correct?
Yeah, this is kind of exciting. We are kind of dipping our toes into a little bit more of community organizing, where we'll be knocking on doors just to talk to the residents and make sure that they have a plan to vote and that they're encouraged and they know that their vote matters.
And now we come to our illustrious guest for today. And this is a really fascinating topic. Tell us about it.
Oh, I'm so excited. Our guest today and the League have been talking about ways that we can really empower and welcome our immigrant communities, especially those who are naturalized citizens now and are able to vote and participate in our process. So I'm real excited to have Isabel Taylor here with Global Lex and Basil Touchon, who has his great immigrant journey to share, and Emily Jones with a new organization which is doing great things for our brand new citizens.
All right, so for all of our guests, we'd kind of like you to briefly introduce your organization and its role in supporting new citizens and multilingual voters in the election process. Who wants to go first?
This is Isabel Taylor. And I am part of the mayor's office. We run Global Lex, which is the city's international center. And our efforts, of course, are nonpartisan, but we try to provide information in various languages so that people understand what we got from the county clerk's office. We translated it to quite a few languages and sent it out to community organizations, to civic organizations, and to pastors to pass along to the citizens that may want to have that up-to-date information.
Basil, what about you?
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here. My name is Basil Touchon, and I'm a Syrian American immigrant myself. I'm a diversity, equity, and inclusion professional and consultant involved with, you know, like so many initiatives and organizations here in the city, including serving as the vice chair of the Mayor's International Affairs Advisory Commission. And I just want to thank you for having me here today, for having this conversation as a naturalized citizen and someone who voted for the first time after moving to the U.S. There's a lot of misconceptions. There's not a lot of folks who think to do reach out to immigrant communities. Sometimes people feel they may, you know, it may not be a great return on investment, or they may like already know how these communities can vote. So I appreciate you having this perspective firsthand, and I look forward to our conversation.
All right. And Emily Jones with the New Americans Initiative, which itself is kind of a new group here in Lexington. Talk a little bit about that.
Hello, everyone. I'm Emily Jones, and I'm with the New Americans Initiative. We are a statewide organization focusing on helping people get on the path to citizenship and naturalizing, and then once naturalized, getting civically engaged. And as we know, that's not just voting, but voting's a big part of that. And then hopefully we will be able to support candidates, immigrant candidates, in their election goals in the future. We also have a C4 organization that's going to be able to help them. So I'm super excited to be here and being able to talk about this with you all today.
Well, guys, I am really excited to have all of you here. And as we have had some wonderful conversations around making this a particular focus for making sure that our immigrants feel welcome. Unfortunately, we've had some kind of anti-immigrant sentiments that are thrown out there in the political sphere. But realistically, all of us, we were founded as a country of immigrants, and that's where our strength really lies. So I'm kind of glad to be able to put the spotlight on that just a little bit. Isabel, can you tell us a little bit more about what you have found being that kind of center on behalf of the city for our international community? What kinds of things are kind of coming up for them as far as approaching this election?
The international community is very complex. It is difficult to describe any one group because even within groups, language groups or cultural groups, there's a huge, huge diversity. And even as we know, within families, right? So some of the issues that come up are, of course, language. And we worry more about the older citizens, the older voters, because it's harder for them to understand and learn English, but if they have sufficient English, of course, we try to translate things that are that we, as I said earlier, get from the county clerk's office to ensure that it is the right information and it is going to the right people. So some of the languages that we can provide for are maybe 9 languages, but we have over 200 in the city. And wow. So I'm sure that we're missing so many people. And so we reach out to civic organizations like the Indo-American Association, the Chinese-American Association, the Japan-American Association, so that they can help us. And we also reach out to pastors and to others that know their communities well.
That networking is really a key part of it, right? Just
it's
to be able
important.
To kind of build trust and that sort of a thing.
Yes.
Basil, you and I had been, we were talking a little bit earlier about the different resources that are available that a lot of times people who are new to the country don't really realize. Can you expand a little bit upon what you're thinking there?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Liza. You know, for example, within the voting process itself, the ability to vote via absentee ballot, that is not something that exists in a lot of countries. The ability to, you know, everyone receives a lot of messaging around election day, election day, election day. But for example, here in Fayette County, we can vote early at each of the Lexington Public Library's locations, which is wonderful. I want to thank everyone who was involved in making sure that we have the ability to do so, because these are spaces that a lot of folks in the community are familiar with, they trust. When they go there, they see familiar faces they trust. But these resources, not everyone is aware of them, and not everyone is used to having these type of different avenues to be able to vote. And so making sure people know that, making sure people have access to that information, making sure that information is received through trusted sources. That's why I so appreciate Isabel and Global Lexus intentionality and what she shared around partnering with those organizations that are already working in the communities, that are from the communities, because that's a big one. I think it's very helpful to have a lot of resources for the international community to be able to participate in the voting process. But also sometimes I think we assume that the reason people don't vote is not knowing how to or not having that information, which of course it's valid and sometimes is the case, but also oftentimes it's other reasons, like not trusting that their vote may matter, or fearing that their vote may be weaponized against them. And so that's why I firmly believe that it's very important to have those resources, but the delivery method and making sure trusted partners who are always in the community, not just the faces who only show around election day, but the people who are day in, day out working with those communities, being the messengers, are quite important as well.
Question for Emily. What's an effective strategy for reaching new citizens and encouraging them to participate in maybe their first election here?
So I think BuySell makes a great point that we're working within the communities that already exist. Folks are already gathering. Folks are already together, having events, being at certain festivals. So our hope is to show up in those spaces where people are already comfortable, and explaining to them, hey, we're here just for information. It's okay if you don't know and you have questions, we are going to ask. Answer your questions. Feel free to ask. There's no judgment here if you don't know how this thing works. The other thing that we're doing is, as we're helping people apply for citizenship, so at our citizenship clinics, informing them of what the next steps are, right? It's not just going to your interview and having your oath ceremony. After that, you need to register to vote, which we've participated with the League of Women Voters to help register new voters. But then you need to know what issues you care about, and then also engaging in your community in other ways, right? It's not just your vote. It's showing up to meetings. It's writing letters about issues that you care about. And so we're all about empowering folks throughout the whole process to understand their rights and responsibilities, and then hopefully, have their voices heard.
Yeah, and those swearing-in ceremonies, they can be really emotional. Talk about that.
Oh, it's like one of my favorite things as an immigration attorney to go to an oath ceremony. Folks are usually so excited to be at that point in the process. BuySell can maybe speak from personal experience, the immigration system is tough. And you have to work really hard to be able to become a U.S. citizen. You have to have lawful permanent residence for 5 years, sometimes a little less if you're married to a U.S. citizen. But then you have to be able to pass a test in English, on civics and history. A little geography is thrown in there. You have to go through an interview with a USCIS officer. And then even after that, you sometimes have to submit additional evidence. So folks have really gone through the ringer before those ceremonies, and the ceremony is sort of the fruition of their
culmination
mm-hmm. of their immigration journey. And the most beautiful thing, I think, is when they recognize the children that are in the room, because if you have a child under 18 and they also have their green card, they get to become a citizen when you do as their parent. And so there's lots of people in the room benefiting from the citizenship ceremony. And so it's just so beautiful. And I never feel more patriotic than when I'm at one of those oath ceremonies.
That was one of my introductions to the League of Women Voters. And one of the reasons why I started volunteering was because I was asked to come to a naturalization ceremony. And you're right. I mean, I swelled with pride in being part of that process. Isabel, I'd love for you to share some of your ideas that we have been chatting about, maybe having research parties mm-hmm. amongst the various communities, encouraging them to get together to research candidates and what the different things that they'd be voting on and whatnot. And I love that sense of community feel. So I'd love for you to share mm-hmm. a little bit about that thought process.
Well, when you work with the international community, you notice all of the commonalities that they have with our local population. And we all love to get together and eat or listen to music or have a party. And so the idea is to get together with your friends and your family and initiate conversations, civil conversations about what issues are important to you, and how do you help, if you're a younger person, how do you help the older people look up bona fide information about the candidates and the positions, and what do the positions do? What does a constable do? So there's a lot of fact-finding that can go on, and it's not just a one-time thing. I think that at different parts of what you're trying to do is, how do you get people there if they don't have transportation? And maybe you can go with someone that's never been there before, and they have a little more self-confidence if you show them what a ballot looks like. And so there's a lot you can do to make people comfortable about voting and having the self-confidence to go in there and vote their vote.
And we were talking offline before we got started here today, the idea that just because people speak a common language, like maybe Spanish, culturally, it's not a monolith. We're talking about some vast cultural differences here.
Yes, exactly. We have something like 21 different countries that are from Latin America alone, and we have people that speak Spanish from all over the world. They could be Asia, they could be Africa, they could be Europe. And so, yes, the cultures are very, very different. Even the culture within the family, you know, are you highly educated? Have you never been to college? Are you, what kind of experiences have you had? A war-torn country, or is it a more stable situation that you come from? So what experience do you have voting at home? That kind of thing. It all influences us, don't you think?
Basil, you had kind of talked a little bit along that same vein. Do you have anything that you wanted to add to that piece?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the point that Isabel brought up about one's previous experiences with voting. As someone who grew up outside the U.S. and then moved here, got naturalized, became a citizen, I never voted until I came to the United States, because in the country where I grew up in Syria, I always felt that my vote was a wash. I even, an experience that I sometimes share that I distinctly remember, there was a point where an election was happening and we were literally standing within feet of the polling station. And my friends asked me, hey, like, have you voted? And I was like, what's the point? Like, it's not like anyone's going to actually count the votes. And they were like, no, you got to trust the process. It's literally here. And, you know, there's a long backstory to the context of that particular moment. But it just felt like participating in that play of voting within that context felt against my values. And I just, you know, on principle, refused to do so. And I was like, no, like that, like no one's going to count it. What's the point? Mm-hmm. Now, moving to the United States, as Emily was sharing earlier, just becoming a citizen. I mean, I still remember that day. I like the pants, the blazer. I mean, the outfit I wore was like red, white, and blue. I wore red, I wore a white shirt, a blue blazer, and red pants, because the United States is this amazing country, this amazing, unique experiment where it's, you know, it welcomes people from all backgrounds, from all countries, from all cultures that are unified together through the principles that this wonderful country is founded on. And that's unique. That doesn't exist in a lot of other places. So that was a very prideful moment for me. Voting for the first time, which was a local election, was a very prideful moment for me. I never take that for granted, because I knew what growing up in a place where that doesn't, where your vote doesn't count, I knew how that felt like. So I never take my votes here for granted. At the same time, though, I do know a lot of other people who, you know, experience discrimination, experience certain things because of the political involvement, because of how they voted in other places, and they carry that with them. And so sometimes there are some communities who fear that, well, if I vote, what if the other party wins, and then they use the fact that I vote against them to imprison me or to revoke some, rights or benefits that I have. And for someone who never experienced that type of discrimination, the idea of that may be unthinkable, but that was lots of people's realities. And unfortunately, even here, there have been some experiences that make that idea not crazy to imagine, because we have some people in the immigrant communities who may qualify for certain benefits they're eligible for. And mind you, these are taxpayer people who earn those benefits by paying those taxes. but they never apply for them because they're afraid that the fact they received certain benefits may count against them in the future. Well, in not the very past history, we had for a while a thing where the previous administration passed a public charge clause. And so for people who were on green cards, if they received certain benefits, that counted against them as they applied to receive their citizenships. And so these people felt validated that, okay, see, even when I qualified for that benefit that I've worked hard for, that I paid taxes for, I should have never received it because now it may hurt me. Some people think along the same lines when it comes to voting. And I think that's why it's important to build relationship, reach out to communities from people who are from the communities, work within the communities to explain those nuances, explain that here the way that you vote is registered, how, you know, like how you voted can't be against, can't be used against you and all those things, because people carry those experiences with them.
Right. And I think one thing that is a little confusing for folks, when you do door-to-door canvassing or outreach, how did you get my name? How do you know where I live? How do you know me? And just being able to sort of explain what a voter file is, how much information is in there, and how much information is not in there, I think is really helpful for folks because it is a scary idea for a lot of people given their life experience. So just to be clear with everybody listening, your voter file does not say who you voted for. It does say how you're registered, what party you're registered with, but it does not say who you voted for. So just to clear that up, that record is not kept. You want to make sure everyone understands that.
Yeah. Question for both of Emily and Isabel, because Basil, you more or less answered it already, but how do you think the political and electoral engagement of new citizens impacts broader immigrant communities?
The community that's here can mentor the newcomers and can welcome them and can guide them. But yes, they understand what the newcomers are coming from, because they keep very much in touch with news of their former home. So I think that there are some communities that have very deep roots here, and those are communities where maybe the newcomers have a little advantage in having people to help them.
And same question to you, Emily.
I think the hope in engaging new voters and then and new citizens is also to sort of encourage those who have had their citizenship for a while to stay engaged and to really integrate into the community and feel comfortable expressing what it is they care about and voting in their interest. I also think it's really good for folks who are not yet naturalized to see what it means to be a citizen, what it means to vote, what it means to be civically engaged, to encourage other folks to get on the path if they can to applying for a green card and then citizenship.
Boy, I think that's a really powerful thing, too, because it is something to aspire to. And, you know, I would say to our listeners out there, think about the language that you use, you know, build that up. I actually am a child of an immigrant. My mother was not a U.S. citizen, and she had her green card. And I remember distinctly the first time somebody called her an alien. And I was so shocked. And I'm like, my mom's not an alien? But it the vocabulary that we use really is kind of powerful. And being able to welcome new people into your community is a really powerful thing. And I think that, you know, our community right now, the way that it is harder than ever for even folks that are citizens to move into a new area. So being as welcoming as you possibly can is great. Yeah. Isabel, I'd love for you to maybe talk a little bit about the impact of these voting centers and the fact that people could actually go together to be able to go do early voting at the libraries.
Mm-hmm. That is very welcome news to a lot of people that are maybe more timid or unused to exercising their rights to vote. And so being able to go either with a few people or a group of people and be, as Basil said, in an environment that you're familiar with is, and libraries are very welcoming. And I do want to say, going back to the citizenship experience, my very first time here in Lexington, when I went to observe a citizenship ceremony, I was overwhelmed with the judge, who closed it by saying, "Welcome home." It really touched me.
Question for everybody here. What steps can be taken to improve voter turnout among new citizens and multilingual voters, especially for those from underrepresented countries?
Well, we do keep coming back to this, but opening up early voting over the course of a weekend will really help those folks, all of us, that are working during the week and find it to be a real struggle to get to the polls on a Tuesday while they're open. So I think that should hopefully encourage voter turnout amongst the entire population, but especially those new Americans and those that are working hourly jobs that maybe can't step away during a workday.
Yeah, because you also think about childcare and transportation and can they get there? So the more times that you have available, the better for all of us to be able to vote.
I agree with both what Emily and Isabel said wholeheartedly. And I would also add we kind of covered that, but those engagement efforts, honestly, simply asking them. Unfortunately, lots of people don't do very deep and intentional outreach to the international community, and that's because sometimes there's a lot of assumptions about how people will vote, why people will or won't vote, and there may be one side who feels like, well, these, you know, this segment of the electorate are unlikely to vote for them, where, you know, the other side may think, you know, it's just a matter of not knowing where to vote or how to vote. But oftentimes, a big chunk of the international and immigrant communities are people who are doctors, who are professors, who are lawyers, who are entrepreneurs, who know how to navigate and lead complex systems. It's the same reason oftentimes that a lot of non-immigrant people don't vote. They're busy. They feel like no particular candidate is speaking to their interest. No one has asked them what they care for. No one has personally reached out to them, asking them to vote one way or another, while they're also seeing and witnessing similar efforts to people in other communities. So they're saying, you know what, I'm going to make a calculated choice if you don't seem to want my vote hard enough. And that's why, not to get into national politics or any of that, that's why you see, you know, like certain segments wanting to withhold votes or vote third party to kind of demand that respect as a voting bloc. And so I was out with Emily, actually, last night. We were canvassing with the New Americans Initiative. And something one of the folks who were canvassing with us shared, in all her years, no one has ever came knocking on her door, canvassing, asking for her, while they have done that for her husband. I haven't had, to this date, anyone come knock on my door looking for me and canvassing for me. And so you know, the immigrant community, like any other community, it's large, it's complex, folks have different interests, and, you know, we hope everyone want to vote, but every vote need to be earned, almost.
And one of the things we were pushing last night as we were canvassing is that these local elections, these statewide elections, these local elections can sometimes be won or lost by 5 votes. And so when folks don't feel like people are asking for their vote in particular, you know, that's a vote. And if you can win or lose an election by 5 votes, that really makes a difference. And so, you know, again, everyone's everyone's voice matters. Everyone's vote matters. Might not feel that way in certain bigger elections, but definitely at the local and state level, they can really make a difference.
You know, the League is dipping our toes into the whole canvassing idea and very much for that building relationships piece. So I'm going to put this out to everybody. If people out and listening would like to try to be more welcoming and find a way to work with folks in the international community, how can they go about doing that?
The New Americans Initiative is actually hosting clinics around the state to help people apply for green cards and also citizenship. And if you're interested in volunteering with us, you can visit our website, www.naiky.org. We'd be happy to hear from you and help you get plugged in to one of our clinics or one of our outreach events.
At Global X, with respect to connecting with different communities, I think that if you have already an idea of which community you'd like to connect with, we do have various civic organizations that we can connect them to, or even just individuals who are community leaders or energetic participants. So it just depends on the person's interest. And sometimes we have people that come in and volunteer because they want to practice their language skills, or they're getting ready to go and visit overseas and they want to connect with some people that live here from that general area. So you can have many, many different reasons for wanting to volunteer, but we try our best to connect you with your interests and with the people that need you.
Basil, how do people get in touch with you?
I think through many of the other organizations. I mean, I'm volunteering with the New Americans Initiatives myself. I've collaborated and partnered with Global Lex, with the League of Women Voters a lot. So I always try and give back and partner with organizations that are in the community, with organizations that are, you know, they're not only showing up on election day, but with organizations that are doing the work on a day-to-day basis. For example, with the African community, we have the Marafiki Center. They have their AfroLex annual conference at the end of October. So that would be a great opportunity to partner with this organization. I also, as I shared earlier, serve on the Mayor's International Affairs Advisory Commission, and we meet quarterly. We have various committees that focus on issues like healthcare, immigration, outreach, and so forth.
Business.
Business, absolutely. And these committees are the committee meetings, the commission meetings. They're open to the public. So I put out an open invitation. Please come show up. Please come and attend those meetings. I've known to serve on quite a few boards, and as someone, again, who didn't grow up in the U.S., the whole concept was novel to me. But then once you get civically engaged and you see that, oh, wow, just by showing up, just by participating, you can have a say in picking the people, you know, leading various departments and agencies in the city. That's an amazing power. That's an amazing power that we all have. And so looking for those partners, collaborating with them, and then as we're doing target outreach with the communities, asking them what are the issues that they care about. If I'm trying to target any particular subsection from the immigrant communities, not assuming what they care about, but asking them, what do you want to see your city council district do for you? What are your biggest needs? What would you like to see your state reps do for you? And then engaging them through those angles, for the lack of a better word, because motivated voters are more motivated when they feel that they're voting for an issue and not for a candidate.
And that voting matters, right?
Absolutely, voting matters.
And it's important to point out that the League partners with these good folks. Talk about the partnerships that you have formulated how you collaborate.
Yeah, well, we're working on a number of different angles, and I hope that it's the start of a very long and fruitful relationship here. But we are looking at doing some work with Susan Lamb, who we've spoken to already on this program, and maybe offering some videos on what the experience is like a little bit more with other languages. And we're going to see what we can pull off in these last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, the deadlines are fast approaching, but we want to thank Basil and Emily and Isabel. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy days to come here to the radio station and sit and really engage in a real, frank and important discussion.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much for being here and for all that each and every one of you do.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. Don't forget to vote.
That's exactly right. And we will see you next time on Voting Matters.
You've been listening to Voting Matters, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Voting Matters from the podcast page at wuky.org. We also have links from the organizations and guests mentioned in this program. See you next time for Voting Matters.